Welcome to Torat Imecha, Nach Yomi with OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Shmuel Bet, Perek He, Chapter 5. Following the death of Ishbosheth, we now move on to the long-awaited establishment of Malchut David over all of Israel. At this juncture, the leaders of all the tribes of Israel gathered in Hebron and approached David, saying, Hinenu atzmecha uvisarcha anachnu. We too are your own flesh and blood. Just as the tribe of Yehuda are your brothers, so are we. Gam etmol gam shilshom. Note that they use the same terminology that Avner had used when he spoke to them about transferring their loyalty to David. Bihiyot Shaul melech aleinu. Even while Shaul was still king over us, you were the motzi v'hamivi et Yisrael. You were the one who led us in and out. This language, motzi umevi, dates back to Moshe Rabbeinu, who before his death pleaded with Hashem to appoint a new leader. Asher yotzi'em v'asher yivi'em, v'lo tihye adat Hashem katzon asher ein lahem ro'eh. A leader who would take them out and bring them back in, so that they might not be like sheep without a shepherd. Rashi explains that this phrase refers to leading the nation in war, and notes that the phrase has already been used to describe David. In Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yudchet, we learned in Pasuk Tet Zayin, V'chol Yisrael v'Yehuda ohevet David ki hu yotzei vava lifneihem. Even as Shaul grew more and more wary of David, as his successes mounted, the people of Israel and Yehuda loved David, for he led them out to battle and brought them back successfully. And this is exactly what the people are referring to here, when they say that even while Shaul was king, David was beloved by them for leading them to great victories in battle. Even then, they continue, Hashem designated you as the shepherd of Israel, again referencing the language of Moshe Rabbeinu, and you shall be prince over all of Israel. The two terms, shepherd and prince, ro'eh and nagid, refer to two necessary aspects of leadership, compassion and authority. David has demonstrated that he is able to effectively balance these roles. Moreover, as we have seen previously with Avner and in Shmuel Aleph through the words of Abigail, Shmuel's prophecy that David would rule over all of Israel was apparently known among the people. The elders thus give two reasons for desiring to accept David as king over the entire nation. First, he has already proven himself as a leader and has the trust and approval of the people. And second, he has been chosen by Hashem. Therefore, the elders of Israel came to the king in Hebron, where they forged a treaty with David before Hashem, and anointed David as king over all of Israel. This is the third anointment of David as king, as we have mentioned, first by Shmuel, second by the people of Yehuda alone, and now as king over the entire nation. Psukim Dalet and Hey give us an overview of David's Malchut. David was 30 years old when he assumed the throne, and he ruled for 40 years, first in Hebron over Yehuda for 7 years and 6 months, and 33 years over all of Israel and Yehuda. The extra 6 months are not calculated into the total, as only full years are credited to the total when calculating the years of a king's rule. So now that David has been accepted as king by all the tribes of Israel, he's ready to move his capital to a more central location, to the city designated by Hashem as the capital of Israel. Let's just take a moment to recollect the status of Yerushalayim until now. In Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Tedvav Pasuk Samach Gimel, we learn that when the tribe of Yehuda conquered the land allocated to them, they were unable to conquer the Yevusi, the Jebusites residing in Yerushalayim. Therefore, they lived alongside them in Yerushalayim. In the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, we read that the people of Binyamin, in whose portion part of the city is located, were similarly unable to unseat the Yevusi and continued to live alongside them. David now has set his sights on Yerushalayim. While it ostensibly belongs to Yehuda and Binyamin, the Yevusi, who had been living there unchecked for roughly 390 years since the conquest, are adamant in their refusal to leave what they consider to be their city. So in Pasuk Vav, we see that David hoped to effect a peaceful transition. He led a large and hopefully somewhat intimidating delegation to the Yevusi. Vayelech hamelech va'anashav Yerushalayim el ha'yivusi yoshev ha'aretz. The king and his men went to Yerushalayim to the Yivusi who were residing in the land. We are not told what they said, or whether they even had a chance to speak. Da'at Sofrim suggests that based on later events, in which David paid for the site upon which the Beit HaMikdash would be built, it is reasonable to assume that he was prepared to offer the Yivusi some incentive to leave the city, either someplace to live in exchange, or fair payment. We'll never know, because in the next clause, the Yivusi threatened David before he even has a chance to state his case. Their threat is expressed in language that is difficult to understand at first glance. Vayomer leDavid, leMor, lo tavo hena ki im hesircha haivrim vehapischim. LeMor, lo yavo David hena. You dare not come here unless you remove the blind and the lame, as if to say, David will never come here. Who or what are these blind and lame that the Yivusi are relying upon to keep David from Yerushalayim? The commentators offer several suggestions. First, the pshat, the most literal approach, is offered by Mitzudot David, who explains that this was a dramatic way of saying, you will not be able to advance upon Yerushalayim until you have removed every last one of the Yivusi inhabitants, down to the blind and the lame, which you will surely not succeed in doing, for even the blind and the lame are so strong that you will not be able to overcome them. Rashi explains that this was an allusion to the idols worshipped by the Yebusi. You will not be able to enter Yerushalayim until you remove our gods, to whom the Navi refers as blind and lame, in accordance with the Pasuk in Tehillim, which is familiar to us from the Hallel prayer, Einayim lahem velo yira'u, oznayim lahem velo ya'azinu, af lahem velo yirichun, raglayim velo yahalechu. They have eyes but do not see, ears but do not hear, a nose but do not smell, and legs but do not walk. A third, fascinating approach is offered by Ralbag and cited by Malbim. The blind and the lame were a series of mechanically operated statues that bore heavy staffs, which they would bring down upon the heads of anyone who attempted to pass through them. They were powered by the flowing water that ran through the tzinor, the pipeline, which is mentioned in the next pasuk. The fourth approach is brought in the Midrash and cited here by Mahari Kara and requires some background information. The Yivusi mentioned here are not the Jebusites of the seven Canaanite nations. Rather, they are a Plishti tribe that had moved beyond the borders of Eretz Plishtim and settled in Jerusalem. Their ancestor, Avimelech, Melech Grar, had entered into a covenant with Avraham Avinu that neither would attack the other. Peace would reign between them, their children and grandchildren. In other words, for three generations. The Yivusi had made statues of a blind man representing Yitzchak Avinu, who was blind at the end of his life, and a lame man representing Yaakov, who was maimed by the angel with whom he wrestled at Nachal Yabok, as a testament to the covenant. These statues had remained in place throughout the generations, despite the fact that the treaty had expired. There was an understandable reluctance to forcibly remove them. Thus, the Yivusi were claiming that to remove the statues and attack their position would be a violation of the covenant of Abraham and Avimelech, despite the fact that it was no longer in effect. David was not intimidated by their threats, and in Pasuk Zayin, Vayilkod David et Mitzudat Zion, he eared David. David conquered the fortress of Zion, henceforth called the City of David. This suggests that David had somehow bypassed the defenses of the blind and the lame. Nevertheless, he is not content to leave them in place. In Pasuk Chet, verse 8, Vayomer David bayom hahu, kol makeh yivusi v'yiga batzinor, ve'et hapischim ve'et ha'ivrim snu'ei nefesh David, al ken yomru iver upiseach lo yavo el habayit. David said on that day, anyone who smites the Yivusi and is able to destroy the pipeline and remove the blind and the lame, which are hated by David. And then the clause is incomplete. It doesn't say what will happen to such a person. The missing information is found in Zivrei HaYamim Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Vav. Vayomer David, kol makeh yivusi barishona, yihye l'rosh ulesar. Whoever strikes the Yivusi first, will be made into a chief and an officer. Vaya'al barishona Yoav ben Tsruya vayehi lerosh. And Yoav ben Tsruya went up to lead the charge, which resulted in his appointment as general of David's army over all of Israel, whereas heretofore he had been the general of the army of Yehuda. It is interesting to note that David seems to have been somewhat reluctant to make this appointment, and Yoav has to earn the privilege of serving in this capacity. We have already seen that David had reason to hold back from offering this honor to Yoav. He may still be harboring feelings of anger at Yoav for having killed Avner, and Yoav has to prove his loyalty and determination to play a leading role in David's cabinet. Yoav conquers the Yevusi by attacking the water source, Vayiga Batsinor. As we have seen, according to Ralbag and Malbim, this was necessary because it would have deactivated the defense system of the Ivrim Vapischim. Alternatively, one could argue more literally that it is a common strategy in warfare to first attack the enemy's water supply. He removed the Ivrim and Pischim, called Snu'ei David, despised by David. This detail reinforces Yoav's desire to prove his loyalty to David. His conquest of the water system takes on a personal significance as an act performed with specific intent to please David. David settled into the fortress and called it the City of David, and David built around the city from the Milo inward. Milo is translated either as landfill, according to Rashi, or as a large plaza adjacent to the city well designated for large gatherings, according to Radak. Vayelech David haloch v'gadol v'Hashem Elokei Tzvakot imo. And David became increasingly great, and Hashem was with him. Hashem is called here Elokei Tzvakot, the God of legions, of armies, to remind us that he is in control of all armies, in both the upper and lower worlds, and is due only to his support that David's army was so successful. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, we read, Vayishlach Hiram Melech Tzor Malachim El David, Va'atzei Arazim V'choroshei Eitz V'choroshei Evan Kir V'yivnu Bayit L'David. Hiram Melech Tzor, king of Tyre, sent a delegation to David with cedar wood, carpenters, and stonemasons, and they built a palace for David. And David knew with certainty that Hashem had established him as king over Israel and that he had exalted his kingdom for the sake of Israel. The fact that tribute was paid to him by a foreign power reinforced for David that Hashem had firmly established his kingdom. In Psukim 13 through 16, Yud Gimel through Tetzayin, we are told that David took additional wives and concubines in Jerusalem as befitted a king of his stature at that time. And just as we saw in Hebron that David's family increased as a symbol of his growing power, so too, here, his family is increased by the births of additional children. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, we read that the Plishtim heard that David had been anointed as king over all of Israel, and they rose up to seek out David, to test him as king. David heard and went down to the fortress. The Plishtim advanced and spread out in Emek Rephaim, the valley of Rephaim, which at that time was on the outskirts of Yerushalayim. Now it is the area roughly around the biblical zoo known as Park Yerushalayim. Vayish'al David b'Hashem lemor, in Pasuk Yud Tet, verse 19, David asked Hashem, Ha'e'ele el plishtim? Hatitnem biyadi? Shall I go up to fight against the plishtim? Will you give them into my hands? Vayomer Hashem el David, Alei ki naton etenet ha'plishtim biyadecha. And Hashem said to David, Go, for I will indeed give the plishtim into your hands. And David advanced to Baal Pratzim and struck them there. And he proclaimed, Hashem has breached my enemies as water breaks through a barrier. Therefore, he renamed the place Baal Pratzim. And the Plishtim abandoned their idols there, and David and his men carried them off and burned them. This pasuk may seem a little bit extraneous. Nevertheless, it is consistent with the earlier removal of the blind and the lame, and is part of a determined campaign on the part of David to remove idolatry from the land. Pasuk Chaf Bet 22, Vayosifu od plishtim la'alot, Vayinatshu be'emek Rephaim. And the plishtim came a second time and spread out again in the valley of Rephaim. David once again asked Hashem, Should I go up to fight them? But this time, Vayomer lo ta'ale, Hasevel achareihem, Uvata lahem mimul b'chaim, Do not go up and face them directly. Rather, circle around to the rear and approach them from opposite the mulberry trees. Vayihi b'shamacha et kol tse'ada b'roshei ha'b'chaim az techeratz. When you hear a sound that sounds like footsteps marching in the tops of the mulberry trees, then you shall charge. Rashi cites a beautiful midrash explaining that this sound was the sounds of the footsteps of the malachim, the angels that Hashem was ascending to assist David in the battle. And that's why the footsteps were heard at the tops of the trees rather than on the ground. When you hear that sound, says Hashem to David, go forth, ki az yatsa Hashem lefanecha lehakot b'machane plishtim. Then you will know that Hashem has gone before you to strike at the camp of the plishtim. Mahari Kara cites the teaching of Chazal here that this was intended as a test for David, just as Shaul was tested at the beginning of his malchut to see whether he would wait for Shmuel before going out to fight the plishtim. And it highlights the difference between Shaul and David, in that David does indeed wait for the signal before going out to fight, indicating his awareness that victory is entirely in the hands of Hashem. As Malbim puts it so beautifully, ki ha-hashkacha dveka im ha-emuna, v'ha-nes dvek im ha-boteach. Divine supervision is predicated on faith, and miracles occur for those who place their trust in Hashem. David is unconcerned by any fear or insecurity in the face of the plishtim, and he does exactly as he is commanded, which yields even greater victory than he might have anticipated. Not only does he expel the plishtim from the valley at the edge of Yerushalayim, he pushes them all the way back to the border city of Gezer. To summarize, we saw in this perek the foundation of David's malchut both internally, as he was anointed king over the unified tribes of all of Israel, and in terms of foreign diplomacy. He was tested and opposed by the Yevusi and the plishtim, and emerged victorious, and an alliance was formed between David and Hiram Melech Tzor, which will have far-reaching effect. Thank you for studying together, Li'ilui Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.